Midrorum's Third Symphony, played by the Utah Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Maurice Abravanel. And that's Saturday Classical for this week. You can hear classical music on this station weekdays between 11 a.m. and 2 p.m., and Saturdays between 7 p.m. and 10 p.m., although sometimes we're preempted for basketball games, and so we come on right after the game and the post-game show. And our congratulations, of course, to the Patriots for their championship victory tonight. Coming up in just a moment will be Joel Block and Stardate, followed by Brain Damage with Eric Corley, who has a very slight upper respiratory disturbance tonight. I don't think that's going to be the topic, although... Well, I don't know. Maybe it is going to be the topic. As a matter of fact, that might be the only thing that you're going to hear tonight may be manifestations of Eric's upper respiratory infection. Oh. Maybe we'll discuss the shortage of water here at the WUSB studios. Who knows? Well, you'll be able to find out in just a few minutes by keeping your dial set to 90.1 FM, Long Island's first station of the 90s, WUSB Stony Brook.
Stardate March 10th. On this date in 1977, the planet Uranus passed between Earth and a distant star and made history. It was March 10th, 1977, and a research team from Cornell University was prepared to watch Uranus pass in front of a star. This sort of event is called an occultation. The Cornell researchers expected to see the star's light dim and go out as it passed behind Uranus. Instead, they saw it blink on and off five times before and after the main occultation. It was clear that something near Uranus must have blocked the star's light, rings around the planet. The rings of Uranus are now known to be thin and dark. They orbit Uranus above its equator, perpendicular to the plane of the solar system, since Uranus itself is tilted nearly sideways in that plane. Uranus was thought to have nine rings, but the Voyager spacecraft found a tenth one when it passed the planet in 1986. Uranus was the first planet besides Saturn known to have rings, although the Voyager spacecraft later found rings for Jupiter as well. After the rings of Uranus and Jupiter were discovered, speculation began on the question of rings for Neptune, which is the fourth and final gaseous planet in our solar system. Then, last summer, Voyager swept close to Neptune and found rings for it as well. Now Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune, all massive gas giant worlds, are known to be central to their own systems of encircling planetary rings. For March the 10th, that's Stardate. Our program is produced by the McDonald Observatory. We're at the University of Texas at Austin. And for the McDonald Observatory, I'm Joel Block.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are experiencing technical difficulties. Please stand by. We will return to our regularly scheduled program momentarily. Please stay tuned. We expect to resume normal broadcasting shortly. Be sure to stay tuned for Jeopardy!
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in...
that you find. A pretty face can hide an evil mind. Oh, be careful what you say, or you give yourself away.
The number you have reached, 1, has been changed. The new number is 2. Please make a note of it. The number you have reached has been changed. The new number has been disconnected.
Ring damage.
Möchten Sie etwas zu trinken haben?
Now tell me right out loud, what are you supposed to do when you see the flash?
Duck and cover. Duck and cover. Duck and cover.
Secret Asian man. Secret.
Good evening, Vice President Nixon.
Good evening, Mr. Howe.
Asian man.
Welches sind die Regenbogenfarben?
Presents its regular feature, Soviet Viewpoint. In today's edition, our commentator shares her opinion on the events in Czechoslovakia related to the withdrawal of Soviet troops from that country.
Anguish and alarm are what I'm sure many Soviet people felt watching on Tuesday on TV a report from Prague. A monument to Lenin was befouled. An excited crowd gathered in front of the Soviet embassy. The slogans were, "Russians, get out." At home you are people, but here you're invaders. And we demand the immediate withdrawal of Soviet troops. Why all of a sudden have such passions begun running high? Why such hatred, I ask myself? What is it? A lack of knowledge of the true state of affairs, or foam on the wave of democratic changes? Yes, we do feel shame for the events in August of 1968, when troops of the Soviet Union, Hungary, the German Democratic Republic, Poland, and Bulgaria rudely violated the country's sovereignty and stopped the democratic renewal that had begun there. The current Soviet leaders have honestly and openly said this. calling the decision to send troops to Czechoslovakia unfounded and erroneous. Accordingly, the Soviet-Czechoslovak Treaty signed in 1968 is being reviewed, and it provided for temporary stay of Soviet troops on Czechoslovak territory. Moscow has confirmed in principle its agreement to bring Soviet soldiers back home. The second round of talks must set the timetable for their pullout and specify the technical and international legal aspects of the problem. Notably, already now, part of the Soviet troops are leaving Czechoslovakia and other Warsaw Treaty countries. I think no one can deny that it's perestroika in the Soviet Union, launched 5 years ago, that has stimulated the revolutionary changes in Eastern Europe, including Czechoslovakia. Everything taking place in that country is its internal affair. But Soviet people are disturbed about the frequent anti-Soviet actions, the organizers of which, playing up emotions deliberately or not deliberately, encroach on the friendship between the two peoples. And this is happening at a time when opportunities have appeared for a qualitatively new dialogue between the USSR and Czechoslovakia, when issues are raised about the withdrawal of Soviet troops, among others, solutions of which will determine both our future partnership based on genuine equality and no interference, and all European security. But these things are threatened by the violent street emotions that occur now and then, alas, in the Soviet Union too.
You just listened to a commentary in the series Soviet Viewpoint from Radio Moscow.
Radio Moscow presents a Soviet Mass Media Review. In this edition, some aspects of the social and political situation in the Soviet Union, debates on the future of the army, and the problem of German unity. As extremist trends in society have gained strength, the mass media have admitted that renewal is always painful, but warned against destruction and tragedy.
The novelist Sergei Baruzdin, in an article in the national daily Pravda, says extremism is the main threat to perestroika. In his view, at a time when the majority of people are still unable to see what various political trends are about, extremist calls only foment passions and may provoke reckless actions.
The leadership of the ruling Communist Party shares such fears. Just recently, it issued an appeal to the Soviet people calling for unity in order to protect perestroika and resist those forces that seek civic confrontation. Earlier, the country's parliament obliged the government to ensure law and order in arranging and holding any mass rallies and demonstrations. The national daily Izvestia has described these actions as evidence of the desire to maintain the normal operation of the machinery of democracy. At the same time, it pointed to another complicated issue on today's agenda.
The country will not be able to end the crisis as long as there are conflicting views on how that should be done. It must be decided how the government's development programs and the platforms of hundreds of politicized associations can be reconciled. These associations must be taken into account because they will continue to gather thousands of people at their rallies and put pressure on the public.
The Moscow daily Moskovskaya Pravda believes we have very good chances to formulate a program that would suit the majority in the near future.
All sorts of platforms and unconventional proposals by individual enthusiasts is not all that we have. There are democratic movements here capable of starting a fruitful discussion in which many millions would be involved.
Judging by a recent statement by Prime Minister Nikolai Ryzhkov, the government is prepared to join such a dialogue because it is also interested in finding a way out of the current situation. This is how Prime Minister Ryzhkov described the current state of affairs in the country on national television.
Если в целом оценивать положение в стране, я считаю, что оно весьма сложное, очень сложное, и с этих позиций.
Generally speaking, the situation in the country is very serious, and we must consider further steps in developing the economy and promoting the political stability of the state from these positions. The economy cannot be considered separately from the political situation in the country, which is vulnerable to the forces of destabilization. The government is determined to use every means at its disposal to ensure normal development. On the other hand, says Nikolai Ryzhkov, the leaders of the country are ready to take all constructive proposals into account. However, these must be realistic programs and not abstract programs that can often be heard at street corner rallies.
The idea of presidential rule in the Soviet Union looks as one of the most popular ones.
The Soviet writer's weekly Literaturnaya Gazeta said that a democracy must have a built-in authoritarian element, such as presidential rule. The United States and France are examples. In a discussion held by the weekly Moscow News, People's Deputy Anatoly Sobchak pointed out that in the current conditions of a crisis of power, at a time when extremists are encouraged by their impunity, the concentration of power in the hands of the president is more preferable than a collective administration. However, at the same time, he calls for balanced power sharing between various structures in order to avoid a dictatorship. Anatoly Sobchak also warned against any haste in deciding the question of presidency and suggested holding a referendum. His colleague Sergei Alexeyev, on the contrary, said that any delay was impermissible.
One must also bear in mind that the introduction of presidential rule is not just an urgent measure to strengthen the structure of power.
The chairman of one of the two houses of the Soviet Parliament, Yevgeny Primakov, said that would be another logical step along the road of democratic reforms. He said that the transition to a multi-party system, in effect proclaimed by the full-scale meeting of the Soviet Communist Party Central Committee in February, would require adequate changes to the structure of government.
The question of the institution of presidency in the Soviet Union will be considered by an emergency Congress of People's Deputies, which is the highest body of state authority in this country. Changes in the international situation and perestroika in the Soviet Union have had a serious effect on the Soviet armed forces and caused debates on the position and role of the army in the new context.
A commentary heard on Radio Moscow says the army has always been respected in this country. It has many times repelled foreign aggression and defended the country's independence. At the same time, the army has proved vulnerable to the same factor as our society in general. Former Soviet leaders criticized today, in their day, sent Soviet troops to take part in disgraceful actions such as the suppression of the Prague Spring or the war in Afghanistan. Now the army itself has come under fire. Its problems, slow democratization, low living standards experienced by career officers, and the lack of social protection have come to the surface.
The Soviet Defense Minister Dmitry Yazov spoke about it in an interview for the national daily Pravda.
According to the defense minister, the problem of the social protection of the military and their families has been caused by attempts, rather common in a number of areas, to limit their rights, including their franchise. The Soviet defense minister is seriously concerned with a great number of derogatory references to the army, which he says is the sole force capable of coping with the most dangerous missions. He mentioned the role played by the army in the capital of Azerbaijan, Baku, where the military prevented heavy loss of life at the cost of their own blood.
In the interview to Pravda, Dmitry Yazov also described as irrational plans for founding a professional army in the Soviet Union. He argued that that would require greater spending. Besides, he called in question the argument that a professional army would be more effective.
Inside the armed forces themselves, there is no unanimity on this issue. General Igor Sergeyev, in an interview for Moscow News, said that many still see the general military service as a symbol of our army. The war against Nazism was won when the defense of the motherland was proclaimed the sacred duty of all, he recalls. However, General Sergeyev is certain that the army will, sooner or later, need surgery that would change its structure.
The new thinking has changed the Soviet military doctrine. Now it is purely defensive. In an interview on Radio Moscow, Soviet Deputy Defense Minister General of the Army Vladimir Govorov explained how it was translated into life.
Ну, если говорить конкретно, то хотелось бы сказать, что уже в настоящее время
the structure of the armed forces, he says, has undergone fundamental change. Army groups are being rearranged along defensive lines. Under the Soviet-American INF treaty, nuclear missiles of intermediate and shorter range are being destroyed. The Soviet Union has, in a unilateral move, announced the reduction of its armed forces by 500,000. Army units deployed in some East European countries after World War II are now returning home.
The youth weekly Sobesednik has held a brief opinion poll in order to find out the people's attitude to the presence of Soviet troops in foreign territories.
Some of those polled believe that the Soviet Union does not have to keep its troops there because no one threatens it. Others are opposed to extending military assistance to any country which, in their view, can defend themselves. Asked about the presence of Soviet troops in East European countries, for instance in Czechoslovakia and Hungary, they will leave soon, and most of those questions said that the pullout is necessary, but that it must be carried out in keeping with a plan.
The possibility of Germany's unification and claims that a future united Germany must become a member of NATO have caused widespread fears. Radio Moscow's commentator Yuri Soltin says,
the leaders of the German Democratic Republic and the Federal Republic of Germany have repeatedly said that a united Germany must not infringe on the national interests of neighboring countries. At the meeting had with Mikhail Gorbachev, West German Chancellor Helmut Kohl said that only peace must come from German soil. However, Federal Germany has to this day refused to recognize the ultimacy of European borders.
The Polish Prime Minister Tadeusz Mazowiecki called upon the West German government to make clear its attitude to the issue of Poland's western border. The Warsaw correspondent of the Soviet youth daily Komsomolskaya Pravda said this.
So far, it is not clear whether Poland's border in the West will remain unchanged after Germany's likely unification. The Poles, of course, cannot but be concerned with this, because that area accounts for one-third of the country's population. Solidarity spokesman Andrzej Belewicki said in an interview that the Berlin Wall being dismantled possibly now would be put up again, this time on Poland's western border, because Poland will be faced with the risk of becoming a vassal of a united German state. This reaction, the newspaper said, is closely connected with the speculations about united Germany's future membership of NATO.
The Soviet Union disagrees with a Western claim that united Germany's membership of NATO is predetermined. In an interview with the national daily Izvestia, Foreign Minister Eduard Shevardnadze said this.
We are concerned with the fact that the process of Germany's unification goes faster than European integration in general. Any attempts to speed up the march of events may hinder efforts to put up a common European home. The Soviet Union will not remain an idle observer to united Germany's entry into NATO.
The Soviet Army newspaper Krasnaya Zvezda has described the foreign minister's statement as a realistic view of the situation.
At the same time, Krasnaya Zvezda said that an option that would suit all is likely to be found. The foreign ministers of the Soviet Union, United States, Britain, and France have already agreed to hold talks with the participation of the German Democratic Republic and the Federal Republic of Germany to discuss all international aspects of their likely unification, including guarantees of the security of neighboring countries and united Germany's membership of military and political alliances.
And the national daily Pravda made this comment.
One must bear in mind that the Soviet Union has already stated that the question of unification must be decided by the Germans themselves, without any foreign intervention. But it is an entirely different matter that the Soviet Union cannot but be concerned with the risk of the military and political balance in Europe being upset, and as a result, to take forced retaliatory measures.
And now a brief look at home news. The session of Parliament discussed a bill on the legal regime of the state of emergency. One of its authors, Юрий Голик, said,
"Какова основная цель этого закона? Основная цель этого закона – это обеспечение прав и законных интересов граждан. То есть чрезвычайное положение вводится не..."
The main aim of a future law is to ensure the rights and interests of citizens. The state of emergency shall be introduced in the first place to protect life and guarantee people's rights in extreme situations, such as social or ethnic clashes and so on. Under the bill, says Yuri Golik, whenever it introduces a state of emergency, the country's leadership must notify the UN Secretary General. The right to introduce a state of emergency will be placed in the hands of the highest body of state power, the president, if that institution is introduced, and the parliaments of Union Republics.
And that ends this edition of Soviet Mass Media Review, prepared at the studios of Radio Moscow.
Well, I don't think it's disrespectful. Does anybody here think it's disrespectful to play?
Disrespectful to play news on the tape. The Soviet Union during while you're playing television themes.
We started playing the news from the Soviet Union, and then we thought it would, you know, they're livening things up over there. You know, they're getting looser, but not that loose.
Now, was the news from the Soviet Union
talking to the microphone? You have a microphone. You might as well talk into it.
Was the news from the Soviet Union being played over the television themes, or was the television themes being played over the news?
No, the television themes was being played under. Oh. The news from the Soviet Union.
So it's being played over, as opposed to under.
Under. Yeah, we didn't overwhelm the news with the themes.
Not at all. I thought it sounded fun.
I think it was wonderful. As a matter of fact, I wonder whether at this very moment in the Soviet Union somewhere, somebody is playing news from the United States and interspersing it with, or laying underneath it music from Russian television programs.
Sure,
yes.
Sure. Of which we know none. Name me one Russian TV program. Can't do it, can you?
I don't think they get in corners.
Oh, Vremya is the news. I can do one. Yeah. There's an exercise program in the morning. They play music videos, but I don't know the name of it. Does anybody know this theme? Well, nobody can hear it because they don't have headphones. But why don't we turn off my microphone and you can hear it. Okay, gave it away right there with the name Gidget, yes. Well, I went to a record store today and found these TV greatest hits themes. We're all playing around with them. Any requests?
Route
66.
Bugs Bunny.
I got both of those. Yes.
60 minutes.
Artie the wise guy. Let's see if we have 60 minutes here. I don't think we do. Well, this is a good side right here. After Gidget, we can hear That Girl, Bewitched, Love American Style, The Honeymooners. Okay, what's the subtitle of The Honeymooners? How did you know that? You're my greatest love.
Arnie Pritchett, excellent.
Arnie, you should do a Honeymooners radio show. Boy. Well, okay, after that, I Married Joan. Anybody remember that show?
Yeah.
Oh. The Monkees, The Brady Bunch, The Partridge Family, the Come On, Get Happy version. There's two versions, you know. And My Mother, The Car, Car 54, Where Are You?
I'm sorry, what's the other
one? When We're Singing, I think it was. It was the first year.
Oh, the first year.
Yeah, there were two. There were two versions, and then the show got canceled. It's About Time. It's About Time. I remember it. I'm going to go right over to that. Because nobody else remembers that show.
Oh, yeah.
Brooklyn's broken out in fights.
Oh, that's Car 54.
In the studio.
Here we go.
It's about time, it's about space, about strange people in the strangest place. It's about time, it's about flight, traveling faster than the speed of light. About space people and a brave crew. As through the barrier of time they flew, past the Roman senators, past an armored knight, past the firing Minuteman. To this modern sight, it's about time for you and me to meet these people of amazing feet.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay.
Jim was explaining the premise of this.
Well, how they educate. What happened is when Gunther Tootie retired from the police department, so to speak, he became an astronaut. And, no, he didn't become an astronaut. He became a caveman.
It's about time.
So cool.
It's about space.
Yes, what happened was that a couple of astronauts break the time barrier, and they go back to prehistoric.
What will
I
do?
And they meet up with people who are living
in
this
strange place where
everything is new. What a fascinating premise. Joey Ross, who played Gunther Tootie in the show Carpet
Before,
plays
one
of the eighteen.
Century.
It's about time for our
good
I guess, at least nominally, or presumably,
the eyes of the producers.
And now, I don't remember being used by, yes, as you say, Robin, the eyes of the producers. In the 60s.
And now we're going to hear my favorite Martian.
I love it. Isn't
that a great show? They just don't make quality TV anymore, I don't think. The closest thing I've seen to this is Nova since then. And that doesn't even... It doesn't light a candle for me. The father's. I've seen that.
Is that what went on in the Reagan White House?
Channel 11 has some pretty weird shows sometimes. I don't know. There are shows that even Fox has rejected, and they just show up in weird places. Well, Star Trek is one exception, I guess. But yeah, the one with the crystal. That's weird.
My father's a crystal.
Okay, we can't talk during this one. I mean, some things are just too... Well, I shouldn't say that. You know, I don't even know how to play that game.
What is brain damage?
What is brain damage?
That's an answer.
Well, the brain damage theme isn't on here. Of course, we haven't even played the brain damage theme in a long time.
Some people don't know what the show is.
Why is everybody here? There's like 50 people in the studio. Was it, is today some kind of special occasion? There's never anybody here.
This is your life, Eric.
Well, yeah, right. Let's get on with it then.
Due to low ratings, Eric, we're introducing a studio audience.
Well, I suppose we should find them all chairs, then.
We're just going to try to get some telephones now and call up.
Well, I've noticed no one's calling, so I guess you folks are the people that call. Week after week. I mean, I guess I should have known this to begin with.
Is this an appreciation or a complaint?
No, I like having people here, you know? I mean, I can get more people in this room than Chris Crowley can get during his show, huh? He's got about 75 people in the studio during his show. I get more people in the Club USB people can get. They had about 1,000 people in here.
Unlikely.
Thursday night. So let's load up the studios. You know what this is? You recognize that sound?
It's a microphone being hit by a record.
No, well, yeah, you know what the record is, though.
It sounds a lot like flashbacks.
Yeah, it does sound a lot like that. You've got amazingly perceptive ears, Susan. I've always said that, though. Yes, this is a record I also just bought today, and I haven't even opened it yet. I have no idea what it sounds like, and the only reason I would buy such trash is because there's a new song, the last song probably ever from Big Audio Dynamite, on it. It's the theme song from Flashback.
The last song ever?
Because they broke up.
Did they?
Yeah, you don't put out many songs once you break up.
And yeah. You only hear that from a few people.
Yeah, that's true. Although I hear rumors of a Clash reunion tour now in England. But that's something else.
So what caused the breakup?
Well, basically, I don't know. They're at each other's throats for one reason or another. But now they've broken up into two groups. Sort
but
of like when the Clash broke
up.
Now it's splintering off
so
into
like
millions
of pieces.
One
quarter of the Clash.
Yeah, there's about 8 different bands that have formed from the Clash now.
Yoko Ono, I think, broke up that band.
Yeah, that's right.
From across the Atlantic Ocean, yes, that woman has amazing powers. I wish she could break up a few governments. That would be nice, too. But,
I think she even broke up the Dorsey brothers
way back in 1948. Yeah. Something like that. Yeah.
She was alive. She was alive. She could have very well been there.
When in doubt, blame Yoko.
So, well, I'm going to open up the record now. I don't know if the sound. It's not even cellophane. What is this? Is this plastic?
Does it have any sound
effects? Anything that will make it sound like
sound effects?
You're
going to
do it on the air. You might as well sound it.
Crashing, stupid music, boring.
Well, I might as well just open it on the air. And whatever sound it makes, it's a sound effect that we'll have. What are you doing?
Give me something that's not too disturbing.
I take it you're not fond of big band music. Certain big band music.
Susan, you just ripped the campus directory.
No,
she just ripped. Did you see that?
Hey,
Susan, you can't do things like that.
No, I didn't.
Hey, Eric.
Yo.
The guy on the phone says he thinks that Big Audio Dynamite did not break up.
They didn't break up.
Sir, explain yourself.
They didn't break up. Just two of the band members left.
Well, that's the same thing as breaking up, isn't it?
No. Mick Jones is still with him. That makes it...
Mick Jones
is the band.
Okay, Mick Jones and Dan Donovan are the only people left in the band right now. Everybody else is left.
But who wrote all the songs, you know?
Don Letts wrote all the songs right
now. Oh, I think Mick Jones wrote
the songs. Mick Jones sung the songs, Don Letts wrote the songs. That's a very little-known fact.
Oh, really?
But you'll see... I mean, Mick can write some good songs, too. I'm not taking anything away from him. But Don had all the the clever lyrics, I think.
All right. Well, I don't think the lyrics in this one are...
Plus, it was his handwriting. You can't read Mick Jones' handwriting.
All right.
You're going to have a lot of trouble when those albums start coming out. Unless they get a Macintosh or something.
Well...
But thanks for trying to cheer me up.
Well, they didn't quite break up. They broke up, but they didn't quite break up.
I mean, they're still friendly, and they're even friendly with... the former members of the Clash, all of whom are in a band now.
I heard that the Clash might be getting back together.
Yeah, well, I just said that. That's probably where you heard it.
I heard it a while ago.
Yeah.
Hopefully, they will.
It would be nice. Well, just for a reunion tour or something. But, you know, the last couple albums from them were pretty bland, I thought.
Well, which ones are you referring to?
Well, Combat Rock was fairly good, but there are some low points in it. But the one after that, I don't even consider a Clash album because Mick wasn't with them.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So,
I don't think Mick started out with the band, either. I think he came on after the band.
Well, I know they had a different drummer to start with, but Mick was there from the beginning, as far as I know. I mean, maybe not the very first day, but certainly close to it. Anyway, thanks for calling. I want to play this new song here.
Free, right?
Yeah, Free. Have you heard it?
Yeah, I've heard of that.
What do you think? Give us a review of it, because I haven't even heard it yet.
Song's okay.
Uh-huh.
I think the listeners will like it, yeah.
Okay.
All right, catch you later.
Thanks for calling.
Bye.
Okay, we've got the Cleveland lottery numbers. What do you have this for? Okay, you got the Ohio lottery numbers. Susan just ran in here with these. Super Lotto 10, 17, 24, 25, 34, 36.
I picked those.
What, they give you the numbers, then they write them out as if you're not smart enough to read the numbers. I mean, I bet I got those all right. Yeah, I did get those all right. And the kicker lotto of Ohio, 416-447. That's 416-447 for you Ohio lottery people. Now, are you saying you didn't hand me this to read this?
No. You made me feel guilty about the paper.
So we gave
so
him more paper
it
to destroy?
Yeah.
Why am I... Okay. Why am I ripping up paper in
the
air?
Why are you opening that on the air?
But this isn't how an album sounds when you open it. No, no. This is how the album sounds. We're going to open it right now.
Break it.
Well, that's how it sounds. Why did they make them so difficult, though?
Wasting your money on
there
that
you
album.
Go. Yeah, you know, I went to two record stores. I went to the mall today. I even had fun going to the mall today.
Do we have that record?
No, we don't, because I asked if we had this record, and we don't. I went to a record store, and it was as bad as East Berlin, you know, and I went to a record store there. There's no records. Well, the CDs, but if you don't have a CD player, it's not really thrilling to have CDs all over the place.
No records in East Berlin?
Well, no, not to speak of, no.
Really?
Yeah. Okay, that's what we got
maybe
here.
Nobody has any record players.
Flashback. Here we go. Free theme song from Flashback. I guess, is that the only version? Yeah, there's only one version here, so we're going to put this on.
Yeah,
it lasts for 7 minutes and 57 seconds. Wow. Wow, well, this is brand new music here from Big Audio Dynamite. Probably the last song they'll ever put out. Something I've never heard before, but how many people in this room have heard this song?
I think I have.
Sucks.
Why is it I'm the only one to not hear these songs?
It's the worst song they ever did.
Yeah? So
I
probably
be biased or opinion.
Well, no, but it'll probably grow on you. Because a lot of people said that about really good songs.
No, not this one.
Well,
let's hear it.
Let our listeners be the just judge, jury, and executioner here. All right, Big Audio Dynamite, new song, Free. We'll be taking your phone calls at 632-6901 here on Brain Damage. Oops, okay, all right, I can't let them get away with that. Sometimes new records do that, they don't queue up nicely. Here we go.
If I knew what I wanted, don't have the time. I wanna ride my motorcycle into the sunshine. My TV is lost and making me feel small, like I'm sad in a cell. All I see is these walls, and I never wanna see another shopping mall. Till I'm free, or I won't have nothing at all. This is my life.
Well, there it is, every last possible moment of the new Big Audio Dynamite song here on WUSB in Stony Brook. Well, I thought it was pretty good. I mean, it wasn't that bad.
Okay.
I mean, it wasn't that great. Okay, it wasn't the greatest song I ever heard in my life, but, you know, it wasn't something to be embarrassed of. I mean, I'm sure these other... Who else is on this album? We've got R.E.M., New Bohemians, Flesh for Lulu, Ultraviolets, Bob Dylan. Wow. Canned Heat, Steppenwolf, Jefferson Airplane, and Jimi Hendrix. Does anybody know what this film is about?
Yeah.
What? Well, you know everything, don't you, Jim?
I didn't see the movie, but I... I don't know everything. I saw the commercials for it. It's about a...
Wait, Jim, are you qualified to speak about the movie?
No, I'm not. I'm not.
Commercial viewing alone?
No, I think I read an article.
Oh, okay.
I wouldn't call myself qualified in any of
that. You read an article. Go ahead.
Oh, no. I wouldn't call myself qualified. This is a completely unqualified view.
Susan, yes?
Go ahead.
Oh, and it's about
Susan, you're going to have to screech because you're far away from the microphone. Or you're going to have to lean right over the table there.
No, it's okay. Well, it takes place in the present day. Let's say 1989, I think, is when it's supposed to be.
What's 1990?
Well, I think it came out just before the beginning of the year. But 1989, 1990, and it's about a federal agent.
My beeper's working.
Somewhat like Eric.
Okay. I got a story about my beeper, which I'm going to tell right after this. Go ahead.
Sure. It's about a federal agent who is, I guess, supposed to be in his mid to late 20s, who is charged with...
Let's just move the mic up.
Thank you. Thanks. Sorry.
I'm professional
right.
Noise of a microphone
being moved.
Being far away.
No, I mean being far away.
You can't hear being moved.
Okay. That's a very interesting technique you've got there. Yeah. Here I am.
Okay.
Sorry.
Now it is up.
So anyway, he's...
Oh, well.
Oh, my gosh, it was up. Oh, my gosh.
Okay, well, let's not dwell upon it.
Oh, no, you mean they heard all this?
Whoops.
Whoa.
Wow, a little screw fell out of it.
Gee.
Where is that supposed to go?
I don't know.
Oh, over there. Wow, how about that? Oh. Learning how these things work. Okay, put the microphone back together. Wow. Move it over there like
this
that.
Kind of like the radio station version of this old house, I guess, huh?
What you're hearing are the sounds of WUSB being put back together.
That's right. We're repairing a microphone stand here. And if you order now...
Okay, I think we got it there. Go ahead.
Well, anyway, so there's this federal agent in his, I guess, mid-20s.
Kiefer Sutherland.
Right. And he is charged with bringing, taking into custody and keeping in custody a character played by... Dennis Hopper, who is supposed to be somebody that was a big counterculture figure from the 60s. That is, as I understand it, the plot of the movie.
Dennis
or at least
Hopper.
The premise.
What about Dennis Hopper?
That's right.
Can you give us any storyboards in this, Jim? Scene one. Where do we go? Where do we start? Where do we go?
Okay. I have no idea.
I appreciate your honesty.
That side one is Dylan, can he...
Wait, why does side two come before side one? Side two is over here, side one is over there.
Yeah, because side two is the older guys, and side one is the newer guys, the RM.
Why isn't side one... Why don't they arrange it side one comes before side two?
You have to go from top to bottom, not from left to right.
Since when?
Well, no, I'm just saying that's the way they've designed the album jacket.
They have side one on the upper right and side two on the lower left.
Yeah.
I'd look at side two first.
You're right. You would tend to do that, but they, for whatever reason, the style that they developed is to go with the top, bottom, right to left.
That's what makes them happy. I guess that's all that matters.
I think most movie theaters are showing reel two first and then reel one. So,
how
something to do with that.
I'll bet you they show you the modern day first, so they play this music first, and then they get to know the older characters, so they play the older music second. So that's the second half of the movie, because the theme is on side one. Song one.
That's what I like about you, Susan. You've got a mind like a steel trap. None of this stuff, you've got it all figured out.
Is that a compliment?
Sure. But you could never explain that again, could you?
No.
No. All right, well.
What about your beeper?
What about my beeper, yes. This beeper is very lucky to be attached to me right now. Because... Well, Susan knows what happened to me earlier this week. I don't know if anybody else does.
I
think
no. Very lucky.
I'm a lucky kind of person, I guess. Well, this is how the story began. Okay, let's move the microphone over there. Yeah. Oh, well, I have it turned down now, so now that I'm.
I should interview you. So, Eric, tell us when did this happen?
If I can get a word out edgewise, yes. Monday night, I was in New York City.
What time was it?
It was about 1 a.m. And I just went to this, you know, those Korean delis that you go to, you know, and you get all these salad bars, and they have all kinds of strange animals, you know, and rice, and you can just walk around in circles for hours, filling up this little plastic container filled with things. And I did that, and I got to the cash register, and you know, the guy put it on the little scale, and came to about $12, you know, because I guess I was really hungry.
You're lucky.
Well, it was my thought. I was working in the city, and I had my car like right there on the next block, so I figured what I'd do is I get all this stuff from the Korean deli and bring it back here to Stony Brook. And, you know, by that time I'd be really starving and it would be
cold.
It'd be kind of cold, yeah, but I got mostly cold things anyway, so it didn't really matter. So it was snowing. It was snowing Monday night, and it was sort of like a, you know, the city in the snow.
Pretty picture.
Blissful type of thing, yeah. So I was feeling kind of happy. And this guy, you know, the Korean guy, gave me this big I Love New York bag, which made me feel kind of foolish, but it was the only bag they had, so they gave it to me, and I was walking down the street, whistling merrily with my I Love New York bag, walking back towards my car. And I guess the mistake I made was going down a one-way street rather than a two-way street.
I think the mistake was whistling I Love New York.
Well, no, I didn't do that, and I don't know how to do that. But I was walking, you know, I walked down a one-way street, which, you know, is okay usually. But it seems at some time, some points, it's not okay to do that, to walk down one-way streets in the middle of the night. And I saw these four people coming towards me on the same side of the street I was on. And I had plenty of time to turn around and go back to the avenue that I just come from and walk down another street. But I said to myself, you know, this...
I love New York.
Nothing's going to happen to me. I mean, I'm okay. Yeah, it's like, you know, it's snowing. It's a nice night. The world is a good place. You know, the Berlin Wall's being torn down. Donald Trump's getting divorced. Everything's in its rightful place, you know. So nothing's going to happen to me. And, you know, these four people were advancing. And I guess it was around the middle of the block I realized that perhaps I shouldn't have done that. And it was definitely confirmed when one of these people came up to me and asked if I could spare
100,
spare some change or something like that. And you know, people ask me that all the time. But you know, when there's four people and they stand around you in a circle and just sort of wait silently while you search your pockets for things, and then when I came up with a couple of quarters, it was quite obvious that wasn't going to satisfy them. And well, you know, they were very persistent, I guess is the word, but also very very threatening.
Persuasive.
Yeah, well, they didn't have to do anything for me to know that these were, you know, dangerous people. They were very dangerous people, and they were very much into forcing their way, let's put it that way, you know, to get whatever it is they want. And at that point, I realized it wasn't worth it to even, you know, question this at all. And I said, take whatever it is you want. And I had about... Well, you know, I figured they were going to take that, too. I figured that, you know, they were going to take everything. But at that moment, it was, you know, just don't do anything permanent to me, you know, because I'd like to see how much snow fell and, you know, that kind of thing. So, so I had about $60 in my pocket. I just cashed a check, you know, and that's sort of why I've been bumming around for change around here for the last couple of days. And I had that. I, you know, wasn't sure of how that was going to go among four people, if that was enough. But they, you know, they seemed to take an interest in that. They took that. Then they went through all my pockets. I was just standing there in the street. Yeah. They were like rifled through all my pockets and you know, everything. They just threw it on the ground. And then they took a couple other things, which I found out about the next couple of days, papers, things like that. But they left me my beeper. Beeper's still on my belt. Maybe they didn't see it. I don't know. It wouldn't have done them much good anyway. They would have had to have used my phone numbers.
Did they take your credit cards?
They didn't take my credit cards. Which, I don't know, you know...
Well, they probably figured that you could stop them easily enough.
Well, I could, but, you know, it's very easy to use a credit card quickly. They never ask you for ID. You just use it, and it's over.
Yeah, but what, 1 a.m?
I would have... Yeah, sure, I've used credit cards at 1 a.m. But I would have known what they had bought. And big deal, you know. They could have taken them. But... Mm-hmm. That's something else. They left me about $6 in cash, which was nice. Six singles. I guess they were just interested in the 20s.
Did they separate the change?
No, they didn't take any change at all. I had plenty of change in my pocket as well. It happened one block away from a police precinct. Can you believe that?
Did you tell them? Did you tell the police at all?
I'll tell you. When I got out of this, I was pretty shaken up because I realized I could have been killed just then. You know, just like standing there. And I'm just very happy that these people didn't do anything nasty, because they implied that they were armed, and I had no reason to doubt that, and because a lot of people in New York are. So I was content to just sort of chalk it up to experience and forget the whole thing at that point and just go home. And they left me my food, too, so I had that, you know. Well, I remember them saying, you know, don't take his keys. I remember him saying that, which was kind of nice, I guess.
I guess I had no idea you had a car around the block.
Oh, yeah, I didn't mention it either, but...
Oh, by the way, guys.
But at that point, you know, you feel like doing everything you can to help them out, because you just want to get out of the situation alive, you know, and all those things. Mm-hmm. I've thought about this a lot of times. I've thought about, you know, what it's like to get mugged and all the ways I'd get out of it, because it couldn't happen to me. I'd say something that would disarm them immediately and show them that I was cool. You know, so they couldn't mug me. Or I'd say, hey, look, it's a blimp or something, and they turn around, I'd run, or I'd pretend I was a cop, or, you know, all these things, or I'd just bluff them out or something, or, you know, I'd slam four people into a wall and run away like they do on TV. And that's what you want to do. That's what we're taught is the appropriate thing. Like, you cannot lose. You have to get even at some point. You have to regain your pride. And I say that's a lot of bull because, you know, my pride didn't mean anything to me at that point. It was just my life. That's the only thing that mattered. That's the only thing I wanted to get away with.
What neighborhood were you in?
Midtown.
You're very lucky.
But right about the center, right about the very heart. Oh, I realize that. But I think I'm lucky. I think I'm lucky because, you know, I didn't do anything stupid.
Yeah.
I didn't try to talk them out of it. I realized, you know, I had lost any kind of battle that there would have been, and I was content with that. And I thank God that I knew something about restraint, about not trying to do anything dumb. And losing $60, you know, in the interim, it's a pain in the ass, but...
You're way ahead of the game.
I'm way ahead of the game because, you know, I got out of that. I came back here to the radio station and I just sort of said, you know, it's good to be alive. It's real good to be alive. Just sort of hung out here, listened to some records and...
I mean, just imagine if something would happen. You had to get somebody to do your show tonight.
It would have been a real bummer. Yeah. Nobody would have done this. Was that why all you guys showed up? Did word get out that I wasn't going to do this show or something?
Take my wallet, but...
I suspect an inside job here. This is like control of the primetime Saturday night slot.
I consider myself fortunate that I didn't... The guy who lifted my car from the Stony Brook parking lot a year and a half ago, I didn't see him do it.
Why?
From last I heard, the guy's still in Rikers for it.
Oh, and they caught him.
They caught him.
They caught him, huh?
Caught him and got the car back 24 hours later.
That's not bad, eh?
Yeah, it was had a storing problem beforehand, before it was loaded. And he drove it into Brooklyn and it stalled in the middle of the street. Yeah, he did something real stupid like ripping the engine computer out. Didn't help. And cop went over to help him. Mm. He noticed the car had been busted into, and got him.
Wow. Mm. You see, in my case, I didn't see anything the police could do to help me. I mean, it was over. What are they going to do? They're going to, you know, if I'm lucky, they'll say, okay, everybody, you know, surround the neighborhood. Let's catch these four guys that took this guy $60, right?
Did you at least tell the cops they could add to the statistics?
I don't want to be a statistic. I just wanted to go home. You know, but I mean, I've had doubts about that anyway, whether I should have reported it or not. But I, you know, at best, the cops would have found four guys, right, with my $60. And you think the guys would have said, "Oh yeah, it's his $60. It must have been a misunderstanding here. I guess this is actually yours. We're very sorry about this whole thing." No, they would have said something like, "He's not telling the truth, officer. This is our $60 or whatever." And you know, I wouldn't have gotten the $60 back, I don't think. And if I had somehow managed to get these guys collared, I would have had to worry about four guys after me for the rest of my life because they would have known who I was. They would have known everything about me. That kind of stuff comes out. Again, $60, you know, that's all that I lost, really.
Well, you know, they're listening to you right now.
Yeah, well,
hey, here's the guy we got last week.
Well, they probably did it to a lot of people anyway. So I guess I learned, you know, just not to walk down streets at certain times of the day. I usually look for the warning signs, you know? And four people coming up the street...
You should have had your American Express traveler's checks on you. You should have did.
Well, if they're ever lost or stolen, what? You don't get beat up, I guess.
They'll send you a tape of the thing from the streets of San Francisco.
But, you know, I think that's a very key thing, is to know when there's nothing you can do.
Yes.
And accept the fact and, you know... Because otherwise, people have died for a lot less than $60 in the streets of New York, and you know, probably every day.
People spend more money than that at Walt Disney.
I spent more money than that on these records, you know? And the record store made off better for me today than those guys did.
I think you're lucky you had the money. What if you didn't have the money and they didn't believe you?
That's something that a lot of people have said. You know, at first I was really upset that I had $60 on me. I thought it was a rotten stroke of luck. But what would have happened if I didn't have $60 on me? What would they have said? Oh, shucks, he doesn't have anything. Let's go. Maybe they would have. I don't know. But maybe they wouldn't. I mean, these guys, I could tell they were dangerous. I don't know how I can explain that, but they were dangerous people because they weren't big people. They were kind of, you know, kind of slight. So you figure they either were very well armed or they knew all kinds of, you know, mm-hmm. interesting ways of defending themselves and offending others. That's what worried me the most, you know.
You're lucky.
And they were all white, too. That was something else. A lot of people are surprised by that, but...
if you want to add to any statistics. Four guys, all white. And I don't know. I don't want to be racist or anything here, but I find that when I'm approached by a white guy who's asking me for money, I find it a hell of a lot more difficult to get out of the situation than when I'm approached by anybody else. I don't know why that is. Maybe they latch on to me for a certain reason. You know?
So, that's the story of the beeper.
Well, that's the story of why I still have it. And you guys ever been robbed?
Yeah.
Jim? How much did you lose?
I think I lost about $80.
Yeah? Just money, though? Did they attack you at all?
No, they didn't. They didn't. I was, let's see, it's 1979.
Uh-huh.
I was walking down...
11 years ago.
Yeah, I was walking down West 43rd Street. I guess I'd just been to Nathan's there at near Times Square, and I were walking down West 43rd Street.
So you were robbed there, eh?
Well, between, not right there, but walking east toward 6th Avenue.
Yeah.
And I had, I was on the south side of the street, and just walking along, and then, and by the way, this was in literally one of those stereotypical phrases, broad daylight.
Broad daylight,
this,
right.
It applied, I mean, it was in the summer, it was about 5, 6 in the afternoon, or 5, 6 in the evening, but it was in the summertime, so sun doesn't go down until about 9
uh-huh.
at that point. So there's plenty of daylight, and I don't know about how many people, I mean, I don't know exactly how many people, but a whole bunch of people, probably between 7 and 10 people, ranging in age, I guess, from about early 20s to preteen,
uh-huh.
I suddenly saw them approaching me, and they were carrying, of all things, a bunch of audio tape. Which they quickly...
Well, I'm in radio.
Which they... Right? It's just, yeah. I mean, the irony, of course, is that I do work here at WUSB, and I also do some work at another radio station, and I had been working there that day. And I had gotten off work and made a couple of stops. I was going to head over to visit a friend of mine who works at a third radio station.
Uh-huh.
And
I just come from a radio station, too, and I was going to another.
Uh-huh.
I had this feeling it's all...
Somehow related. And what they did was, before I could get away, they laughingly, they weren't as menacing as what you're describing, because they were kind of laughing. I mean, not that they were trying to include me in a bunch of merriment, but they were
trying to
in
laugh
a derisive kind of way, right, kind of, or an almost, really a gleeful, almost mischievous kind of way laughing.
Right.
I wouldn't call them vicious or menacing in the sense of what you're describing. They threw this tape around me to try and restrain me, and then they basically, you know, wanted me to give me their money, and I reached in to get my wallet, and...
Wait, Jim, they tied you up with audio?
That was what the attempt was. They were just trying to restrain you with it. They surrounded me.
Was cassette tape or
like,
reel to reel?
I think it was maple.
It was like reel to reel. But there were a whole bunch of them there, so I...
Where did they get reel to reel tape?
I didn't think to ask them. Would have been funny if they worked at a book radio station.
Probably coming from another radio station.
I don't know what speed it was.
Were they a recording artist or something?
I don't know, but they... although they were smiling, I still didn't think it was really much within my interests to try to get away. That I felt at that point they might take more physical action,
mm-hmm.
and they kind of were pushing me around a little bit. But I would never say that I was actually I wasn't beaten or hit even anything like that. I wouldn't even say roughed up, just kind of shaken around. I was basically recorded. And I reached and I took my wallet, and I took out my my billfold, and I was going to give them the money that I had there. And interestingly, what I remember was that some of the kids, I literally mean kids, kids probably about 12 years old,
mm-hmm.
were the ones that were the more aggressive. They were reaching into my pockets, pulling things out that really weren't of any use to them. The other people were more patiently waiting for me to just hand them the cash. And a matter of fact, at one point, one of them said, "Hey, it's enough. Come on, we have enough here. Let's get the heck out of here." And they took off with, I guess it must have been about $80 in cash. And that was basically all. That was all they took. I mean, I wasn't happy to lose $80, but I mean, as you said, I was happy that I was not dead, and in fact, that I was not even even injured. And interestingly, one of the people, one of the older people, as they were leaving, said to me, "Do you have enough money to get home?" And I said, "Yes," and he left. Now, I'm not saying, but he didn't do that. He let me get home. And I'm not saying
I live in California. I need airfare.
I'm not saying that these individuals were wonderful people, but what I am saying is that it was an interesting lesson to me in a couple of things. First of all, how suddenly something like that can happen,
mm-hmm.
and how, as you say, there are situations where it's just not wise to try to be a hero, and it was also interesting to me how there are degrees of crime. Not that I really didn't, I guess I knew this before, but this was a working illustration of it for me. I mean, I'm sorry it happened to me, but it did provide an interesting insight into the mind of a criminal, in that these people definitely were criminals. They did something wrong, but they were not what I call vicious criminals.
The potential was there.
It could have been, but given the fact that I didn't resist, they didn't take it any further than what they announced the crime to be.
Jim,
so
you're on what, East 43rd
West
Street?
43rd
West
43rd
Street.
Street
on a summer afternoon at 5:30.
Mm-hmm.
I would think there would be people passing by.
This whole thing probably took less than two minutes. Right?
Well, yes, it did take less than 2 minutes. It probably took no more than a minute. But you are right. There were people around, and after it was over, I heard people asking me what happened, and I said never mind, and
you
I
missed
kept walking.
It, you fools.
Yeah, and I was thinking to myself afterwards. It was hard for me to. I can't really say this definitively, but I sensed that maybe there were people who watched the whole thing but didn't do anything.
Well, what could you do?
Well,
I mean, with a mob of people, you
maybe
know.
Maybe one of the tactics.
Well, what I mean is
the marauding band was to perpetrate a crime that didn't look like a crime.
That may very well have been it. It may not have been that people may not have actually known what had happened.
There's nothing
but
very alarming going on from a distance, perhaps.
Well,
tapping the guy up in tape. Hey.
Well,
I always thought the perfect crime, and if I was into this kind of stuff, I'd probably do it. Would be to get a couple of video cameras and get some of those little police barricade things, and then, you know, not block off the street so people could walk down it, but have the street blocked off from other angles so it looks like you're blocking off the street. And then you jump somebody and you start robbing them, and you have other people around with cameras, and you just tell everybody else you're making a film. And it's a great way to kidnap people, too. You just sort of, you know, tape the whole thing and say, stand back, folks, you know, we want to get a good shot of this. We don't have to do it again.
Well,
and it works.
Theoretically,
you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if it works, but I assume it would.
Theoretically, yeah, but you know where I think it wouldn't work, in that I think that if somebody's being kidnapped or robbed, it's actually being noticed.
Right.
I think with all the cameras and everything, I think that people who are watching, will instinctively recognize the difference between play acting.
Not if there's good acting.
Well, but you see, the person that's being robbed
mm-hmm.
or being kidnapped is not going to be acting. They're going to really be emoting, and I think that would trip off the fact that something was wrong. So I don't know. I don't feel that it would
have
work.
Have you ever seen a film where somebody gets kidnapped? I mean, they're supposed to look like it's really happening.
Yes, but that's an act. I mean, you're raising a good point, but I think ultimately in a film, it's an actor doing an excellent. If the actor's doing a good job, they're doing a good job or an excellent job of portraying something that happens in real life. But in real life, if someone watches someone being kidnapped, even with TV cameras around, they're going to sense that there's an extra edge in that person's emotion that might not be noticed in a if someone is watching a film. Remember,
well,
if someone's
maybe
watching a film, they unconsciously or subconsciously are aware that they're watching a fictional portrayal. Whereas if they're on the street, even seeing cameras taping, even though it might at first seem that they are set up to figure, well, this is just a portrayal. The fact is, if they're watching a person being kidnapped, I think they're going to look at that person and think, wait a minute, there's something wrong here. I better make sure and just and let someone know that at least that something's going on.
Taking it a step further, though, I think it'd be really good if you actually went through and got permits and everything and actually were filming. I mean, this would be a great plot for another film where, you know, they actually get permits for the film, name the film, hire a cast and everything like that, and use it to commit a real crime, you know? Like the kidnapping of the mayor or something, like, I don't know.
Of course, this is all hypothetical.
It's all hypothetical.
But
except for what happened to us, that's actual.
No, it is
now,
actual.
Now, let's go back to your robbery case.
Just,
now, what have you learned from this? What don't you do now?
Okay, well, I just one clarification I wanted to make, that someone had asked, rightfully so, what did I expect if people did know I was being robbed? Did I expect them, with a crowd of people, to come over and have them start defending me? No, I didn't. But I had a sense, and I could be wrong, but I had a sense that somebody could have walked to a payphone and called the police, and there are a lot of police in that area. And
yeah,
maybe
there aren't
nothing
a lot of payphones
could have
work
been
anymore.
True, but this is 1979.
That's true, yeah.
And maybe nothing would have happened anyway, but I had a sense that this was a case where the individuals, which doesn't always happen, but that there are individuals that were just watching passively and yet not doing anything, and they would probably be the first people to rail about the high crime rate, and yet wouldn't, mm-hmm. you know, wouldn't even. But again, that's all supposition on my part. Important thing is I did come out alive and in one piece. And what you asked, Eric, about what I not do anymore is, I think it made me more conscious about being approached or about being in a situation where I not get boxed in, although sometimes you just can't avoid that. For example, in your case,
that's,
I mean,
true.
I
could have avoided that.
Perhaps but sometimes you just don't, an individual, and there's nothing wrong with that individual because they just don't, it becomes kind of a marginal thing. They think to themselves, well, maybe it is something, but no, probably it's not something. And many times it turns out not to be anything. So this was a case where it happened to go the other way. But in general, the lesson I learned was just to be a little more alert, not to get boxed in that way, to have some potential avenues of escape. And there have been, I guess, one or two times when I found myself walking down a street, particularly at night, and saw some people walking on the other side or on the same side, and I made myself extra alert and mentally projected what I would do, and I think in one case even I did cross to the other side of the street as a precaution, but I don't know that those people were necessarily up to no good. I think, as a matter of fact, in one case I could see for sure that they, turns out they weren't up to any kind of nefarious.
I mean, I thought about crossing the street too, but I think that's pretty damn obvious, you know, when
that's true. I had just thought of that as maybe giving myself a little extra edge of a little extra margin. But as you said, perhaps one solution is, if you can't, to turn back around and go to a more crowded area. But again, this is not to say that you were stupid or weak or whatever for not doing it, because it's a judgment call, and sometimes it goes one way and sometimes it goes another way. And as a matter of fact, I have to say that there was a subsequent occasion not too long ago where I, again, had a problem. So it's not that I became a perfect expert at avoiding avoiding trouble. I was not injured. And as a matter of fact, I didn't even lose any money. Maybe I lost a quarter. But this was an obnoxious individual. And without realizing it, he was very intoxicated, very drunk, and that may have accounted for a lot of his obnoxious behavior, and he was giving me a hard time not letting me pass through the subway, but he ended up leaving me alone.
Was he a troll? One of those trolls?
No. No, he wasn't.
They unlocked the gates for you.
Right, I know, I realize what you're talking about. No, he in fact was not.
You see, now, this particular case with me, these guys were not on anything. They weren't on crack. They weren't on you know, any kind of alcohol. They were completely straight. And that's where I made my first mistake. I said, hey, four white guys are obviously not drunk walking up the street. I'm safe. What a stupid thing to think. What a stupid thing. I mean, you know, I couldn't believe I even made that assumption. And, of course, that's when I realized they were up to no good. That was the scary part. Because these guys were level-headed, and they knew exactly what it was they were doing, and they had done it before, and there was nothing I could do to get out of it. And like I said before, I'm just glad I realized that quickly and was able to remain calm and not, you know, bolt or anything or try to fake them out. And, you know, I hope that that most of us, if we are unfortunate enough to find ourselves in a situation like that, you know, we just
live through the moment and sacrifice a little bit of pride and some cash, perhaps, but get some benefits out of it by living to tell about the story. So I'd like to know if anyone out there has had similar experiences, if they agree or disagree with what we did. Number is 632-6901. Well, now, I don't know if you did the same thing I did afterwards. What did you do, just walk away and try to forget about it?
Yes, in both cases that I've mentioned, yes, that's exactly what I did.
Uh-huh.
I did exactly what you did.
Uh-huh. I don't think there's anything else you could do at a stage like that. I mean, it's a difficult situation to be in.
Yeah, I guess if somebody would want to report it to the police, I see nothing wrong with that. Although you mentioned the possibility that the people end up being caught of reprisal, but again, that's something that the individual has to balance in their own mind. And but somebody not reporting it, I wouldn't blame somebody for not reporting it. As I said, I, in fact, did not report that first incident I mentioned. Second incident, I tried to get a token attendant call the police, but, and this is not necessarily a jab at the police, but they did not show up by the time the person that was bothering me left me alone.
Mm-hmm.
It may be that they showed up shortly after that. I waited a bit, and the token attendant said that when the police showed up, she would report the matter to them. But in the first case that I mentioned, where I was encountered on the street and surrounded, I just walked away, didn't say anything to anybody about it.
Yeah, I was pretty shaken up, and I felt great afterwards. But a couple of days after that, it just I couldn't stop replaying the whole thing in my mind.
I think that's a very normal response. I also had the same reaction.
Yeah, and I was
yes.
High strung, I guess, is the word.
Yes.
Just kind of wanted to close out a lot of things, but I think I'm over that part now. But yeah, I mean, you know, I could have gone to the cops. I could have said, "Hey, these guys just robbed me." But you know, from what everyone has ever told me, I would have been there for hours. They probably would have wound up, you know, doing something horrible to me too by accident. You know, sometimes cops do that. you know, I wouldn't have gotten anywhere. I wouldn't have gotten anywhere at all, except wasted a lot of time and, added to the statistics. Big deal. You know, I'd rather add to my own knowledge and experience and know what not to do and know, you know, what I did right and what I did wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. It's a scary situation, streets of New York. It could happen here, though. It could happen anywhere.
Yes.
You just got to know what the warning signals are. And,
yes.
And if you ever find yourself in a situation like that, know what to do to stay alive. And don't think Rambo. Don't think, I'm going to get even if it's the last thing I ever do. I'm going to get that money back. I'm going to get these guys. They're going to suffer. You know, think about what you've gained as opposed to what you could have lost. And if you've gotten something out of the situation, you're ahead, way ahead. And I've gotten a lot of appreciation for just people, things, places, all the stuff that could have been just wiped out
mm-hmm.
if I had done the wrong thing. So,
yes, I think you deserve credit for once the situation was in effect of doing what you felt was the best way to avoid it getting worse than it could have been. So I think that's wise on your part.
Well, I want to take some calls. We've got one call on the line. Let's get some more. 632-6901. I can't believe nothing like this has ever happened to anybody. So I know there's crime victims out there that want to speak up, give advice, or agree, disagree with what I've said, what we said here tonight. So the number is 632-6901, area code 516. Good night, Susan.
Good night.
Susan, why are you here?
Why am I here?
Yeah, is there something going on tonight I should know about?
No.
Oh, okay.
Well, I was watching a very good basketball game. Good night.
Oh, that's right. They won, didn't they?
It was a great game.
Congratulations, Stony Brook. I guess this is the last game they can play, right?
It was the last game. They were champions.
Oh, that's right. Just fine.
You know, it's the last game in the old gym.
The last game in the old gym? Ooh. Moving to the new gym, eh?
Moving to the Fieldhouse.
Fieldhouse.
No, you know,
whatever.
They're building it, I know it's off the subject, but they're building it as the Stony Brook Sports Complex. Yeah.
Right, the New York Islanders are going to move over here, right?
Sure.
Good
night.
See you later.
Play Bugs Bunny.
I'll play Bugs Bunny, Susan.
Good night.
632-6901, and, I'm going to take this call here, Jim. I don't think you'll be able to hear it because we don't have any headphones, but I'll try to translate what the person's saying.
Again, 632-6901. We're taking your phone calls on Brain Damage, the free-form radio talk show that asks very serious and silly questions sometimes. Good evening.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Can you open the digital door later?
Yeah, sure. We'd be happy to. Thanks very much for calling. That guy was on there for a half hour to ask that question. Is anybody out there? Are we going over the air or what?
Let's see. We have our...
Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
You are a shithead.
Oh, well, thanks very much for calling. Maybe we shouldn't take any calls then, eh? 632-6901. Let's get some calls in there. If we don't get some calls in a few seconds, and I'm talking multiple calls, we'll just go back to music or whatever.
Well, worse. I'll
sing. 632-6901. Okay, that's bringing in some calls here. Let's see what we got. Good evening.
Hey, what's up?
Oh, what's up? What's on your mind?
Oh, is this supposed to be like a music show or a talk show?
Sorry?
It's supposed to be a music show or a talk show. I was just wondering.
Well, do you hear music or do you hear talk?
I guess it's a talk show.
That's very good.
So you're talking about mugging and stuff, right?
That's what we're talking about.
I got mugged once also. Yep.
You want to tell us about it?
Yeah, I don't know. I was surprised because I wasn't even really scared at the time.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, I mean, this guy, this really big guy, came at me with a knife, you know, it was like at night.
So you actually saw a weapon?
Yeah. It was in Brooklyn. That's where I live, right?
Uh-huh.
And it's really scary. I mean, afterwards, and I just realized, like, how could have lost my life, you know, I mean, could have gotten killed. It was really heavy.
Uh-huh. Is there anything you would have done differently?
I think I was pretty suspicious because the guy was kept like following me for blocks, and I didn't really do anything. I tried to play it cool, and then next thing you know, he was right in front of me with a knife. Uh-huh. I think I should have like ran, or at least, you know, maybe went to a store or something. But it was pretty quiet night, so.
There's all kinds of warning signals that you can determine.
Sense it, kind of.
Yeah, and you know, I learned something from my experience, and I'm sure you learned something from yours, and, you know, it's all a learning experience in a sick kind of way, so if you can just make sure you never make that mistake again and know what to do if it should happen again, and at the same time get over any bitterness or feelings of revenge, because you're not going to get anywhere with those.
Yeah, well, that's natural, though. I mean, at the beginning...
Oh, sure.
Yeah, that's how it felt, but...
I mean, I wanted to... jump in my car and drive around and corner the guys, and I figure, what was I going to do then, you know?
I'm over.
It doesn't work like it works on TV and in the films, you know? It just doesn't work that way. Those portrayals do us such a disservice by making it seem as if, yeah, you can always come out on top, you just got to get angry. It's not true at all. It's, you know, a couple of people said, you know, it sure would have made a difference if you had been carrying a gun. Right, I would have been dead. That would have been a big difference. Because there's no way you can outdraw four people, or even one person for that matter, many times. And you're pretty much at someone's mercy when something like that happens.
And there's nothing really the police can do afterwards, really.
No, there's nothing. I'd like to do something that would prevent things like that from happening in the first place, but I think we're far away from that stage of trying to figure out why this is happening and how to stop it, apart from the obvious of... you know, not having so many people in poverty and, you know, bad situations like that. That's going to take years to fix.
Anyway, so...
All right, well, thanks for calling.
All right, no problem.
And good luck.
Bye.
632-6901 is our telephone number. So give us a call. Area code 516. Good evening.
Hey, there you are.
Yeah.
Turn the radio off.
Turn the radio off.
Yeah, you brought up a lot of interesting points.
Yeah.
I also turn the radio on. I listen to a little music. I was out to the bars this evening and stuff. But anyway, the thing that came to mind was it that you were assaulted? Was that it?
No, I wasn't actually touched except for when they were going through my pockets. But the implication was that I had a pretty firm choice there, your money or your life, and I believe that they had the means of carrying it out because...
So as they approached you that way, did they have weapons or anything like that?
They had something with... I couldn't tell what it was they had.
I
wasn't about to ask, hey, what's that under your jacket, you know?
I know the feeling. I've been mugged twice.
Uh-huh.
The first time was from my own stupidity. I got involved in something I shouldn't have been involved in. And what we call them now is there is such a thing as a no-win situation, you know?
Uh-huh.
And the second time I got mugged, this is a pretty crazy story, but I was in the state of Washington. And on the weekends, they throw Hawaiian luau's in the parks and all like that, you know?
Uh-huh.
And what they do is they bury the hog and the turkeys and the roast and all in the ground and roast it. And the townsfolk had asked us to just kind of watch the food all through the night, so, you know, that it would be there when the festival started, you know? So this is a true story, by the way. We fell asleep around 3 o'clock, and I had a distinct feeling that was not the right thing to do, but, you know, it was 3, took going towards 4 in the morning, and there was two of us. And it was the craziest thing. We woke up, there was people... ...point you brought out that... if at all possible to remain calm and try to figure what the best move is.
Right, which in most cases I think is not to make any move at all.
You may be right.
If something were happening to me, if I was being assaulted and I thought my life was in immediate danger, and, you know, if I didn't do anything, these guys were going to kill me, then I'd have to do something, God knows what. But as long as I can get out of the situation, if I don't move and don't do anything to antagonize these people, that's what I'm going to do.
You know, it's a crazy thing that goes on where people, this kind of thing happens more often, you know? Where,
well, you know, is it really happening more often? Or I suppose it is to a degree, but...
Well, I don't know. I'd like to see justice go back to the days of the six gun and the old West there, you know?
Uh-huh.
Where it was dealt with on the spot, and people had a respect for right and wrong, you know?
Have people ever had a respect for right and wrong, you know?
Oh, sure, are you kidding? When they used to have hangings in the street and stuff.
Is that a respect for right and wrong, or is that just fear for your life, you know?
Well, what would happen was they would bring the reality of the situation to the people, you know? Right, it's so far removed, the justice system is so far removed. I mean, if a guy approached me on the street,
uh-huh,
you know, if he had a weapon, I would probably, you know, react a similar way that you did. I mean, obviously, what can you do, you know?
Right.
If anything else, I think I would, I tend to anger very easily, you know? I think I'd go after the guy. What the hell you got to lose, you know?
You can lose a lot.
I know, but to let someone, do something like that to you is, I think that's just as wrong. Unless it's like you say, obviously, you know, that you stand to lose more than if you took action. In other words, if the guy had a weapon or something like that, it'd be quite obvious that there's not much you could really do, you know.
Well, I mean, you always have to assume that the person is equipped to carry out whatever threats they're making. I mean, I lost $60. From that, I've learned a bit about the value of life, about the stupidity of walking down dark streets alone. And, you know, I think it's a pretty good bargain for that, you know, for $60, I'll lose that money just so I can realize a couple of important things I should have realized from the beginning.
No, I'm saying that you definitely make some good points about something like that. I'm afraid I go more for an eye for an eye.
Uh-huh.
And,
but you have to understand, it's not as easy as you make it sound. You can't just get an eye for an eye. It involves more than that, and once you get your eye, then there's, you know, they're going to want a nose or something. It just keeps going on forever and ever, you know?
I see your point, yeah.
I mean, in some cases...
But why should you be the victim, though? That's the part...
But I'm not the victim. I'm not the victim. I've benefited from this. I've lost $60, yeah, but I'm not a victim. I'm not going to be intimidated. I'm not afraid. I just know what I did wrong. I'm not going to do that again. I know what I did right, and, you know, I'm glad I did that. So I don't consider myself a victim at all. I really don't, and I think that's a key step. If you think of yourself as a victim, yeah, you're always going to be wanting to get revenge for that. But that's not necessarily the case.
You know, I understand. I understand feelings of anger and wanting to get back for something like this. But where does that really get you?
I don't know. It's just the thing that I realized lately is I had a friend tell me that, you know, I always said sometimes there's no-win situations in life where you just can't win, you know?
Well, if you realize it's a no-win situation, then you're ahead at least, you know, and maybe you won't repeat the no-win situations. That's the way I try to look at it.
You guys going to spin any music tonight?
At 12 o'clock, yes. There's music coming on there.
All right.
Where are you calling from?
Where am I calling? From Kings Park.
Kings Park.
Yeah, over here in San Remo.
Okay, well, get some crazy glue and cement your dial to 90.1. Because you'll hear lots of good things.
All right, what are you going to play later on?
Well, it's not me. Raz is coming. Oh, actually, I think Arnie is filling in for Raz, and there'll be all kinds of metal things.
Heavy metal stuff?
Things like that. Death, speed, all that kind of nonsense. Well, not nonsense.
Awesome.
Nice stuff. Very nice stuff, guys.
All right.
So keep listening.
Okay, God bless.
Okay, take care.
Bye.
632-6901. We have about 23 minutes. We're talking about crime, mugging, robbing, all those nasty things. Jim, are you in the other room?
Yes, I am.
Ah, you are. Okay. Kind of quiet there. I didn't know if you were there. Any reflections on that last caller? Eye for an eye. What do you think?
Well, I guess essentially...
Thank you, Jim.
You're welcome. And I rest my case.
Go ahead.
I don't know if I really adhere to it that way, because I don't know about deterrence that much. That is to say, I don't know if going for the eye for an eye method leads to any kind of effective deterrence. That attitude, I don't blame a person for having. I don't think ill of that last phone caller. I don't think I'm a morally superior person to that last phone caller. I think that, in principle, he is right that people should be made to understand the reality of right and wrong, and that perhaps certain individuals are deterred when an eye for an eye method is used, but it seems to me personally that there has not been enough attempted with non-eye for eye methods yet to come to the conclusion that you must go back to an eye for an eye. This is debated very hotly now with respect to the death penalty as far as an eye for an eye issue is concerned. And I don't think I would consider myself somebody that is soft on crime. I don't really think that most people are. I think the only people who are really soft on crime are criminals.
Right.
I think
it's a big election day ploy, you know, to say this person's soft on crime.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody is soft on crime.
No, I don't think so at all. I agree. I think that there's just a difference of opinion as to the methods to be used in deterring or punishing crime. And I'll use the death penalty as an example right now. When someone is killed wrongfully, I guess the only time I could think of someone rightfully being killed is in a genuine case of self-defense where it's absolutely necessary. But when someone is killed deliberately, wrongfully, when they're actually murdered, I'm not talking about some accident taking place either or something like manslaughter. I mean, not that those things are good, but that where I'm only talking about where intentional murder is concerned. Personally, on a gut level, I think the death penalty is fine. I think that if someone has, in fact, cold-bloodedly murdered somebody, I couldn't care less about their feelings regarding whether or not they want to lose their life. I think that in my gut, my feeling is tough luck for them. Let them lose their life.
I agree with you there. I agree with you there. I don't care anything about the people themselves. But I do care when my own government is the one to pull the trigger.
That's where I agree with you. That's why, and as far as my, even though in the gut I'm viscerally saying to myself, yeah, kill the murderer, I'm thinking to myself, well, I don't know if in the total view of things whether that is correct. Because, first of all, there is the question of assurance that you have the right person. I think essentially we have a very good justice system in this country, but it is not a perfect justice system. It certainly needs some improvement, but beyond even certain needed improvements that there may be, I'm really, by improvements, I mean more in the carrying out. I think that in principle it's an excellent system. But it is not perfect because human beings administer it, and none of us, it is to be assumed, are perfect. And therefore, a mistake can be made, and mistakes have been made, where
Oh, sure.
The wrong people, as I'm sure you know, you're aware from reading the news and such, the wrong people are mistakenly convicted.
I think there's an episode of L.A. Law coming up where that's going to happen.
That's
Thursday, in fact.
Yes, yeah, so that would be interesting to watch. And even though that's a fictional program, it's certainly based. There is certainly real life precedence for a fictional portrayal of such an event. And the idea of somebody being killed by their government in a death penalty situation when they in fact did not commit the crime for which they were convicted is a horrible nightmare, because as bad as it is when somebody is imprisoned wrongfully, at least if it's discovered that the wrong person is found, that person, or that person was convicted wrongfully, that person can be let out of prison. It does not give them back the time they spent in prison, and I don't mean to minimize
if you take the revenge thing even further, you know, is that person then going to destroy the government for putting him in jail in the first place? You know,
well, he's really
angry, obviously.
He certainly is, but at least, you know, he can channel that anger in a legal, productive way by getting an attorney and seeing if there's legal action he can take against the people who might have been negligent in the execution. That's a bad word to use. Might have been negligent in the carrying out of the legal system that wrongfully put him in prison, but at least he is there with his life, whereas if somebody is executed, they're gone forever, and the state cannot give that person back their life. And since the state cannot do that, the state should not have the power to take the life away. But that's talking about where a mistake is made. Now, getting onto the issue of where someone, let's say, in fact has committed a murder, and let's say freely admits to it, does not deny, does not protest and say, I didn't do it, this is wrong. Well, that's also a question, I think, to be addressed. And there again, it's, as I said before, it's not that I feel sympathy for this person in any way where I feel, well, they killed somebody, but let bygones be bygones. My feeling is that the whole idea of the state setting an example for citizens by going through the mechanics of depriving somebody of their life is somehow very demeaning to the concept of what the function of a government is, or one of the functions of a government is, which I think is to help instill a good sense of civic responsibility in the population.
Right, more of a positive,
exactly.
Positive approach,
exactly.
Than a negative approach. And you can't really get more negative than the death penalty. Okay, I want to get people to call in, not necessarily to debate the death penalty, because we've done that before. We never really get anywhere. But I would like to know if people have any other outlooks on this whole situation, if they've ever been a victim of a crime, or if they think we're fools for dealing with it the way we did. You know, it's not that hard to call up and tell us if something happened to you. Took a bit of guts on our part to admit what happened to us, so call up and tell us what happened to you. 632-6901. We've got a couple open lines. Let's get a bingo and see what's going on out there. Otherwise, we'll have to assume that there's just no crime problem on Long Island or anywhere around here, which everybody tells me isn't the case. So 632-6901, area code 516. Let's see who's out there. Good evening.
Hey.
Frank? Yeah, what's up?
Sorry to hear you got mugged.
Well, I guess I did get mugged. That's the word for it, isn't it? What happened to me? I got mugged. Yeah, I can say that officially.
I mean, that's really something.
I prefer to say I got robbed. I don't know. That sounds better somehow.
Yeah, you know, that's something that's an experience I don't share with you.
You do or don't?
No, I don't, you know. But,
what kind of phone are you...
A couple of friends of mine were mugged.
Boy, this is a weird... What kind of phone are you on? Your voice sounds very,
It's just a dial phone.
Okay. We won't go into that any further then. Tell us what happened.
Well, I don't know. A friend of mine works for a courier service in the city.
Okay.
My friend Bob.
Right.
And he was at a payphone on the side of a highway in Brooklyn, and these four guys just came up to him while he was on the phone, and one of them had a gun, and, you know, it was, like, not far away from his head, but, you know, they walked up on him, it was on him. There's nothing he could do, and they demanded his money, he gave it to him, and they left.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, that really, you know, it shook him up. He was really angry, you know, he was pissed off as hell.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, he didn't go out and buy a gun or anything.
Was he wearing a uniform or something?
No, he works in plain regular clothes.
Yeah.
You know, he just happened to be in the wrong spot at the wrong time.
I think that's what a lot of it boils down to, just being in the wrong place at the wrong time. And eventually it's, if you're in the city or even in almost any area, something is going to happen where you're going to have to rely on your wits. And I think if you go into a situation hot-headed and determined to get revenge, you're not always going to win.
I don't know. Sometimes it might pay to be armed, but most of the time you're not going to be able to do anything.
Oh, God, no. The vast majority of the time.
Not all the time, mind you, but most of the time, you know, you're going to get japped and you're not going to know what was going on.
I mean, if you have a gang of people, right, coming up the street towards you and about 100 feet away they announce, yo, we're going to start robbing you as soon as we get to you. Okay, that's a good point. If you had a gun, you'd be able to do something with it. But usually people don't announce that fact until they're upon you, around you, and you just can't do anything. There's no way. And if you're armed, if you've got any kind of weapon on you, it's just going to be all the worse for you because
at best they'll take it.
At worst they'll use it, you know?
Yeah, that's not true all the time. Like, you know, every now and then you see somebody who's good thing they had something to keep to protect themselves with. So, I don't know. I think the basic problem with crime is that for some reason or another, certain individuals, like, are born or maybe, I don't know, created flawed somehow, or they don't have, like, a moral capability. Like, they don't have what you would call a conscience.
Do you think they're born that way, or do you think it develops?
I think it's a combination of both, but it's really strange. And that, you know, you get a lot of people who, you know, it doesn't matter what environment you come from so much as you would think, you know. But there's so many people that just come from supposedly, you know, good families, and somebody will turn out wrong out of that family. And it's just like, you know what I'm saying? And they'll do terrible things. You know, everybody else is all right. You know, just for some reason, one person will come out wrong.
Well, that's something I think we should be devoting lots of time to figuring out just why that is.
It's really true. Some people just have no conscience.
But, you know, I don't go for this, handwriting analysis that you see everywhere.
No, that's bogus.
Lie detector tests.
And polygraphs, too, because it's a real psychopath will not react to lies. They can lie better than anybody, you know, better than any individual.
Uh-huh.
They lie as a matter of course. A real, you know, what a psychologist would call a sociopath or a psychopath. You know, those people show absolutely no emotion when they do the most terrible things.
But the one I really don't understand is the handwriting analysis, because a lot of people I know, when they get new jobs, they have to have this handwriting analysis test. And I ask them why, you know, what's determined. And is there some kind of thing where they're able to tell if you're the person that would commit a crime in a future situation? And I just can't believe that we're actually at the stage where we have this blind faith that this is correct.
But as far as
I mean, I'd be locked up right away if they saw my handwriting.
A crime and punishment, guys. You know, it's almost as if laws were not written for criminals. Because, you know, I mean, the law has no effect on a criminal. He's going to do what he wants no matter what the penalty is.
Uh-huh.
That's a proven fact, because you could look at, like, you know, the London, Charles Dickens used to write about the London of the late 1700s.
Right.
Where they would hang pickpockets. And a public hanging was the biggest congregating spot for pickpockets, because everybody turned up to see the hanging, see the pickpockets.
Great way to meet people, too.
And, you know, that's true. This is a fact.
Uh-huh. This is about several hundred people on...
The 1770s, you know, right around the Revolution, was, if anything, as wild or as wilder than New York City of today. There was as much, you know, if not more crime and murder going on, you know, back in those times as there are now.
That's my point, that, you know, things...
And they had hanging offense, you know, hanging was
was the punishment for like 50 offenses.
Oh, sure. If everybody thinks that crime is worse now, maybe it is to a degree, but I don't think it's the way the 10 o'clock news likes to describe it, because that's that just gets people to watch the news, but it doesn't really portray things accurately. What I was saying was several hundred people are on the waiting list to see executions in Florida, and I just wonder, you know, first of all, why do they allow people to even be a part of this if they are going to, you know, do these things to people? What can you possibly get out of you know, being a witness to something like this, unless you're trying to discourage it?
I don't know. If you ask me, some people certainly deserve to die. The only reason I could see for not having a death penalty is the chance that someone who didn't do it gets killed.
Uh-huh.
That's the only reason, because these people deserve to die.
And that's a pretty good reason, I think, and it's
die. There's no doubt about it. You know, I think if it could be really, you know, if it could be really proven that they're guilty, there's no reason they shouldn't be shot.
Uh-huh. But why are these people around, and what's making them be around? That's what I want to know the answer to.
It seems to be just no special reason.
Why did that guy in Canada suddenly go crazy and shoot 14 women?
Who knows? That's a different kind of person. That guy was an obvious...
They're all different.
Know, there's all kinds of, you know, like sometimes there's a spot in your brain called the amygdala.
Uh-huh.
It seems to be like the spot that controls violent, aggressive behavior. And some people have like tumors or some sort of viral infection at some time, they theorize.
So does that mean it's not their fault?
Hmm?
Does that mean it's not their fault then? If it's
no, because you're actually being driven crazy by, you know, you're driven to that state by some infection in your amygdala. Should read up on it. It's pretty interesting.
That's something I think we should become educated about, because
for instance, the famous Texas Tower murders.
Yeah.
You know, in the '60s, when that guy got up on the Texas Tower.
Right, right.
And you know, that one cop had to go up there and, you know, shoot him, but that's what they think happened to that guy, because he did have, like, a tumor in his brain that was right by his part. It's like, I saw an interesting thing on Channel 13 where they had these cats, and they hooked up wires to this part of their brain, and all they would have to do is just, like, stimulate it electrically, and the cat would immediately, you know, take its, you know, aggressive stance, its paws up in the air,
uh-huh,
hissing with its teeth barred, and they turned it off, and the cat would just go back to normal. It was pretty interesting.
Well, sounds like an actual... positive use of animal research there, so it does have its benefits, I suppose.
It's some people are just going to commit crimes no matter what their background. Because I've seen it, you know, being a kid, I've known some people who've ripped off lots of houses and done, you know, all kinds of things. And they had no economic motive for doing this, really, because these people weren't hungry. They, you know, they came from good homes. And yet they would still go out and just steal, rob, you know.
Uh-huh.
No regard, you know, for anybody else. Because, you know, some people are just incapable of feeling anything for another human being for some reason. And it doesn't necessarily, you know, it can happen to anybody. It's, you know, not something that happens to, you know, people because they're poor. Because look at how most people that are poor don't get out and steal. You know, that's the truth.
I think we've got to...
My grandfather during the Depression, he had nothing. You know, did he get out and rob people? No, we made do, you know.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I don't think that's really, you know, as true as you'd think.
Well, you know, I think we've got to start looking at crime as not so much a personal affront to us, but rather something that we've got to understand and put a stop to at the heart, whether it's figuring out people getting these strange tumors or you know, the situations leading up to it. It's not going to stop it completely, obviously, but it's a lot better than just killing all the people that commit the crimes and, you know, expecting that to be a solution.
Some people will commit a crime no matter what you do with them. They have to be, like, segregated from the rest of, you know, from the rest of society forever.
Uh-huh.
These people have to be identified and kept away. So I think, like, Australia was such a good idea, because constructive labor is like, the best thing. It's, like, the best kind of therapy, especially if you have something that you can make, you know, for yourself. You know, for people that, you know, it's like sink or swim. You know, you get out there and you do something, and you can make a new life for yourself, or you can go back to your old ways and get into more trouble.
Well, I'm not sure if the Aborigines would agree with that, but it is an interesting point.
It worked. They built a nation out of that place, you know.
Well, thanks for calling. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from North Point.
Okay. Bye. I'll keep listening. 632-6901 is our telephone number. Give us a call. We only have a few minutes left. And feel free to bring up any new topics, which maybe we can embark upon next week. Good evening.
Yo.
Yo.
How you doing?
Okay.
Well.
What's up?
Nothing. You know, this crime stuff's really depressing, isn't it?
Well, it's kind of depressing, I suppose, but there's positive to be gotten out of it, and you know, I think we can move ahead with renewed vigor if we choose to.
I agree.
Have you ever been the victim of a crime?
Oh, yeah, many.
Many, huh?
Yeah, it's just, I don't know, I don't understand it.
Uh-huh.
I'm nervous to walk down my own streets.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, if you look like you're expecting a crime to occur, lots of times it does. You know, if you're on the subway and you're looking nervously at everybody, it's just sort of an open invitation.
Yeah, I guess so.
If you look more dangerous than the person next to you, though, it doesn't really happen as much.
Yeah, I wish I was huge, but, you know.
Uh-huh. Well, it doesn't exactly mean being huge, just, you know, potentially explosive in some way, but that's one method.
All right. Thanks for letting me talk to you.
Okay, well, is there anything you...
Can I say one thing to my friends out there?
Sure.
Dead nudes rule.
Well, maybe that explains a few things about you. Our number is 632-6901. We have exactly 3 minutes left. Jim, any comments? Oh. Jim fell asleep, didn't he?
No, I guess not. I guess not.
No comments, eh?
Although, I guess one about the eye for an eye thing
that
you were discussing before. You made another good point about how even apart from...
I guess this is what Susan wanted to hear. Well, that's not actually the Bugs Bunny theme. That's the Mary Melodies theme.
Yeah, I guess that's what she meant.
Okay, well, that's enough of that.
Fun.
We sort of mixed the lighthearted stuff with the serious stuff here.
I like that.
Let's talk about violent crime again.
I was going to say that, even apart from the death penalty, the idea of going after people eye for an eye, that what you said was that it can escalate, that then they come after your nose, you know, to use an example, use a metaphor, and where does it stop? And so my feeling is that if prison sentences were meted out more consistently and if they were long enough to match the severity of the crime, I think it would be very useful in terms of controlling crime. But
if prison itself is a deterrent, if it's not, what's the point?
I think it is a deterrent, but I also think
a lot of people say prison is just where you learn how to commit.
Yes,
but
I think it's because of the way prisons are structured. I think there should be a change such that people are not do not end up using prison as a school. But at the same time, I'm not suggesting that prison be needlessly brutal. In other words, there's a lot of brutality that goes on in prison that even for prisoners should not have to be there. And I think that that's a whole question of penal reform in and of itself. I think overall it's unfortunate that people have to, in general, law-abiding people have to be so concerned and so worried on a day-by-day basis about not just losing money, but about their very physical safety.
It feeds upon itself. The more you worry, I guess, the more you worry or something like that.
I think that's true.
There's a lot of good out there, you know? I mean,
yes.
I've been walking around the streets of New York at night for years.
Yes,
so
me
you.
Too.
And, you know, it's so rare that something like this actually happens. But if you read about it all the time and watch the news all the time, it seems like it's happening every minute, every day, everywhere you look, and the city just isn't safe anymore. It's not true.
Well,
there are certain unsafe parts, certain unsafe people, and certain very dangerous people, yes. But if you dwell upon it for too long, you're going to lose all sense of reality. If you don't dwell upon it at all, you're going to lose all sense of reality, too.
Yes. I think that it's... Go ahead. No, I thought you were going to say something.
No, not really.
Oh, I was going to say...
Except it's 12 o'clock, we got to get out of here.
Oh, I was just going to quickly say that that I think that the crime problem has gotten worse, I think particularly with the with additional infusion of drugs, but I think there again, that's a whole additional issue about what not only causes the infusion of drugs and how to go about eliminating it, but about what social conditions make the use of drugs such a temptation for so many people, and that in itself has caused, I think, a tremendous upsurge in crime. But at the same time, I think you're right when you say we don't have to become obsessed with it, and that there's still a lot of experience we have that's positive, and that's it.
I'm afraid we can't talk over this, Jim. This is
sacrosanct.
Sacrosanct, that's the word. We'll be right back right after this.
It's a beautiful day in this neighborhood, a beautiful day for a neighbor. Would you be mine? Could you be mine? It's a neighborly day in this beauty wood, a neighborly day for a beauty. Would you be mine? Could you be mine? I have always wanted to have a neighbor just like you. I've always wanted to live in a neighborhood with you. So let's make the most of this beautiful day. Since we're together, we might as well say, would you be mine? Could you be mine? Won't you be my neighbor? Won't you please? Won't you please? Please, won't you be my neighbor?
Well, I
well,
say...
Well, Mr. Neighbor, I'm glad we're together again.
What's he doing? Is he doing a whole show? Okay, enough of that. If he's in your neighborhood, then you got something to worry about, I think. But
well,
otherwise, you know, it's probably pretty cool.
Well, Eric?
Yeah?
Can you say, give me all your money?
Well, I guess it's a good phrase to know, but try not to use it too much.
That's right.
Anyway, thanks to all the people that called. And thanks to those of you that didn't call. You know who I mean. Arnie's up next.
Death Racers.
Death, I'm sorry. Did I ruin your show by giving away your identity?
No,
Death Racer is here. Is that right? Death Racer. I got to remember that.
A while ago.
That's right. It looks a lot like you. But,
not me, though.
Death Racer.
That's right. Let me go. At the Death Show tonight.
Where is the Death Show?
It's at Sundance.
Ah.
Still go. It doesn't start.
If you don't want to listen to Death, Death what again?
Huh?
Death Racer?
Death Racer.
Okay. Well, this has been brain damage. You can see why. We'll be back again next week doing all kinds of fun things. Stay safe. Stay cool. And above all else, stay happy. Thanks for stopping in, Jim.
Thank you very much for having me on, Eric.
We'll see you in 3 weeks. Eh?
Right on.
All right.
On brick, stone upon stone, they grow. Choking the atmosphere so incredibly slowly. Sulfur and carbon and hydrogen sulfide and lime. Favor corrosion and cover your cities with grime. Something is killing the land before your eyes, and the sunshine is not.
Hi, this is Matt with the Concert Billboard for Sunday, March 11th. Coming up tomorrow night, Alice Cooper and The Front will be at the Ritz, but they're sold out. And there's a battle of the bands here at the Union Fireside Lounge. And that will feature Press Gang, Dark Circle.